Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bova Metzia Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Let us open with an announcement. Today's shiur will begin on Kuf Tes Zayin Omid Beis at the beginning of the new perek, the last perek, Asiri, the 10th perek of Bava Metzia Habayis V'Aliyah. For the Daf Yomi purists amongst you, let us note that Kuf Tes Zayin, Omid Aleph, the beginning of this daf, is found at the 41-minute, 22-second mark of the daf Kuf Tes Vav, Gemara Markings Audio Daf Yomi Recordings. I repeat, the beginning of Kuf Tes Zayin, Omid Aleph, is at the 41-minute, 22-second point on the daf Kuf Tes Vav recording. We now turn to the beginning of the 10th perek, the Mishnah. Habayis v'aliyah shel shnayim shenaflu. Bayis, in this case, is a ground floor of a house. Aliyah, a second floor. Shel shnayim, Rashi cites as examples a case of two brothers that inherited this and divided it. That's the example, I should say, that Rashi cites. You can envision a case of a shutfin, two people that own this structure, and the structure collapsed. Shnehem cholkin beitzim ubavonim ubaofar. The two divide the building materials that remain after the collapse, the wood, the stones, and the dirt. Rashi adds a detail. When the Gemara uses the term cholkin, one could get the feeling that it's 50-50, 50% to each party. However, the height of the ceiling of the lower structure may very well be different than the height of the ceiling of the second story. So Rashi points out on the fourth line from the top, Shneim Cholkim, Hakol Lefi Hagova, Lefi Ma Sheho Echad Haya Gavoy Mechaveroi. One of the structures might have been higher or taller than the other. So, with that difference in mind, the division will take place. Vavonav Afro Meruba, Mishel Haver, as a result of the greater height of one of these two parts of the house, the portion of the building materials due to him would be, of course, greater. So with that in mind, in accordance with the difference in height, they are cholkim, they divide. Lefi shein nikur eza avonim shel elyon veza avonim shel tachtam, because at this point in the Mishnah, we can't identify which stones and other materials are from the lower structure and which are from the upper structure. So if the lower structure, just for illustration purposes, was a fifth higher, taller than the upper structure, so three-fifths of the building materials will go to the lower structure and two-fifths to the upper structure. Now, we continue in the Mishnah. V'royin elu avonim ho'asuyos l'shtaber. And then we evaluate, and I'll point out right ahead of time that this section of the Mishnah is not necessarily a continuation of the case we just illustrated, but it actually features or illustrates a different situation. Whereas in the first situation we said that, and Rashi pointed out, it was not nikur which stones came from which structure, which part, upper or lower. Here the Mishnah describes a case where you're able to identify something. And we'll first read the Mishnah and then go to Rashi. So the Mishnah said, V'royan elu avonim asuyas l'shtaber, and we evaluate or we look at which stones in the collapse of this structure were the ones that broke, that came apart, as opposed to other stones that remain intact. Im hoyo echod mehen makir mitzas avonav, if, let us say, one of the two parties could say with certainty, these are stones that came from my part of the structure. Notlon, he takes them. He has a claim with a tone of certainty to it. So he takes what he believes is his. The Gemara will discuss, well, what does the other guy say in the face of this claim? So he takes those that are, that he recognizes as being complete, as being part of his structure. That expression means, as Rashi says, that the other party will take material corresponding to what this guy takes. Now, I'm being rather vague when he says take material. Does that mean he takes broken stones or other complete stones? We'll wait for the Gemara to clarify. All told, the Mishnah, if you were simply to read it through with just a simple translation, things would appear to be, I think, very unclear. So we tried to present the Mishnah in a fashion where you see that each section really describes a different situation. Before going further, we're going to look at Rashi on the Mishnah, and let me point out that what Rashi says here is something that the Gemara itself will allude to. So we're learning the Rashi now as a sort of introduction to points that will be alluded to in the Gemara. The Rashi on the about the fourth narrow line, Royan Elu Avonim Ruyos Lishtaber, Im Yesh Avonim Shuros Shel Levenim. If in the collapse of the structure there are broken bricks. Interesting expression in the Rashi is Avonim Shvus Shel Levenim. Avonim generally means stones. Levenim is a reference to bricks. The sensitivity to different building materials is something that will come to the fore at the beginning of Maseches Bava Basra. So, in the meantime, it seems that we're talking about bricks that are broken as a result of the collapse. Zeh Omer Shlemo Sheli V'Zeh Omer Shlemo Sheli. And each party is saying that the complete ones, the unbroken ones, those are mine. So you have two parties arguing with one another, and can we now come to conclusions based on observation? Royan Elu Avonim Ru'uyos Lishtaber. We analyze, we look and see which bricks, either upper or lower, were fit or were subject to breaking. Im shel elyoin, im shel tachton. Whether was it the upper bricks fit? Were they fit to be found now broken, or the lower one? Akol lefi amapolis. The investigation and the analysis is in accordance with the way the structure came down. Shim nechbat habayis miyasoidai v'nofal tachtov. If the house fell in from its foundation, and it fell on location, hachoima V'nofal, let me read that again. V'nofal tachtov ha'choyme b'mekoma. And the walls, everything fell in place. Almost like what we would call a controlled demolition. Where the structure, it appears to me, maybe the term imploded would be appropriate. It fell in place. Yesh ladas, well that then shows us shehatachtonis nishbru, must be that the bricks that were associated with the lower part of the structure, they're the ones that broke v'lekach nofla ha bayis or ha choma, and therefore the structure fell in this fashion. It fell on location. Why? Because the bottom bricks were faulty. They're the ones that broke. V'im nechbat akoysel lahalon kemakel shehaya oimei zoku v'nofel. If the structure fell down like, and Rashi uses imagery here, imagine a stick or a pole that was standing upright, and the pole falls down. So the top part of the pole is not located anymore on what we call on location. It's further away. It's fallen. The top of the pole is now far away from the original spot over which it was located. It fell down like a stick. And in describing that, the upper bricks of the wall fell to quite a distance. Now, if the bricks are falling at quite a distance, so there's additional force upon them that would possibly cause their breaking. The upper bricks are the ones that broke. They fell from a great height. The lower ones would be expected to remain intact. Their fall was from a limited height. So, once again, in looking at the way the structure fell, you can come to some conclusions regarding the ownership of the whole unbroken bricks. If the structure imploded, then we would associate the whole bricks with the upper structure. If the structure fell at a distance, so then the upper bricks would be the broken ones, and the lower ones the whole bricks, the unbroken ones. Now let's turn back to the Gemara. Midikotani royin. From the fact that the Mishnah said which we look at which bricks are the ones you would assume are the broken ones, Michlal de'ika lemekam alayu, it would then imply that there is what to conclude. You mekam alayu means you can reach a conclusion about them. Iba chavsanofil. We just dwelt on this in Rashi. Did it fall b'chavsa? Chavsa. It would be a situation we refer to as imploding, fell in place, on location. E bechavota nofil, or it fell through, we'll say, impact, which would cause the bricks to be found at a distance. So from that point in the Mishnah, from that word v'royin, one would come to the conclusion that there is, as you say, you can reach clarity as to what happened. Well, if that's the case, ihachi resha amai holkin, why in the resha did the Mishnah talk in terms of division? We have a mass of building material and divide it in accordance, as we said, statistically with the heights of each property respectively. And the term dividing doesn't take into consideration which ones are whole and which ones are not whole. It's divide all of the materials in a proportionate fashion. Now, we have to make sense of the Mishnah, and in order to do so, we're going to go through a number of stages, and that's the double underline that you see here in the Gemara text. It's one of our series markings. On the side in the margin, we have a topic heading we call the Nosei/Mivne, structural note. The double underline marking appears there, and they are She'elos, questions. Levarer, to clarify, Amai Katoni Bereisha Chokin, why in the beginning of the Mishnah does it say simple proportional division? V'lom noisnim esavonim l'mi shem shalom. We don't give the stones to whom they belong. So now let's go through the clarification of the opening of the Mishnah that spoke about Chokin. Why Chokin? Nechsi, let us see. E b'chavata nofio, if it fell through the chavata, the falling like the stick we described before, and where material was found at a distance. So then aliyasa is bar. It's the bricks of the upper story are the broken ones. E b'chavasa nofio, if it fell through implosion, falling in place. Tatyaisa is bar. The tatyaisa is the bottom. The lower ones are the ones that are broken. So the owner of the lower structure would take the broken ones. And in raising this question, it seems that the structure fell. Someone saw. People saw it fall. So couldn't they tell us how it fell? Lo. Sricha, no. It needs to be taught. This mission needs to be taught. The Nofil Belela. It fell at night. And so that no one actually saw how it fell. Question, v'lechzinu b'tzafra, why not look at the situation in the morning? You know, it's okay, so at night you can't see. And retract. It's not necessary that we're assuming people would have seen the structure fall, but just see how it fell. So the Gemara had answered, if you want to see how it fell, it's dark, you can't see where things are. So the Gemara now suggests, well, why not in the morning see how where the debris is located? So why Chokin? Answer, Depaninu, the debris was removed. Question, V'lechsi man paninu v'lishaylei, why not find out who removed the material from that area and ask him how was the material distributed? How did it fall? At a distance, in place? Answer, Depaninu b'nei rishus harabim v'yozu lama. The people that removed it wasn't a private contractor, who were members of the public that simply cleared away the debris, and they've gone their way. We don't have anyone to ask. Question, v'lechsi b'rishus deman yasvin v'leve idoch amotzi mechaveroi olov haraya. There's another method to determine ownership. And here the suggestion is, why not see in whose domain are the materials located right now? And he would have, we'll say, the stronger claim to the complete stones, and the other one would be called the Motzi Mechavero. He's trying to take away from the domain, from the possession of the first guy. Upon him is the burden of proof. So why couldn't we... Why does the Mishnah say Chokin, which means straight down the line, proportional division? There's another way of settling doubtful situations, and we just describe it. Let's determine things based on in whose domain the material is located right now. Lo, Tzricha, and here we have three answers to this last suggestion. The material is sitting right now in a courtyard owned by both of them. So neither one is trying to take away or take out of the possession of the other. Inami, another option, the materials are in a public domain. So again, we don't have one having a stronger claim based on items found in his domain, in his possession. The Iboyasema, another approach, is in fact that it did, that the material is right now found in one of their domain. However, we're not going to view that as a motzi mechaver ovaraya situation. Shutfin bechi haigavna lo kapti adodi. Partners, we mentioned that the structure was owned by both of them. they partners in situations like this, the key high gavva, situations like this, they are not mindful of one another. They're not mindful to suggest that my domain is going to acquire for me at the expense of the other. Rashi says, "Lo kapti adodi." The Rashi that we'll look at together is a few lines down from here. They're not mindful of one another. Lemikni reshusadi day, that his domain will acquire for him, making the other one the motzi mechaver with the burden of proof upon him. The afkuri mifkar le kochad reshuse legabi chavre. When it comes to partners, and it fell into one of their domain. So he, as Rashi says here, each one is mafkir le kochad reshusei legabi chavrei. He grants the use of his domain for the other one's use. Laniach shom chavotzu, to put his thing, his belongings there. Hilkoch kinami yasum b'reshus dechad minayu. Therefore, even if the materials are found right now in one of theirs, reshus, lo havi idoch motzi, the other one is not considered an extractor, a taker of. D'b'reshus dehainami yasvi deha lo koper olei mila oshle duchta. Because when it's found in the possession, in the domain of one, that owner has granted use rights to the other. So wherever it's found, you can't speak of it being found exclusively in one's domain over the other. We saw in the Mishnah, Im hoyo echod mehen makir, if one of them recognizes complete bricks to be his, so what does the other one say? What's his response? And that's what the Gemara asks. V'halo matoyin, the other party, what is he claiming? I dekomar in. If he's saying, yeah, those are your bricks, pshita, then it's obvious that the party that recognizes them as his will take them. V'i lo omar in. And if the other party doesn't say, yes, they're yours, lama no tail, why does this one have a right to take it just because he says, I know them to be mine? Elo diomar le eini yodea. The other party is saying, I don't know. So in the face of a response of, I don't know, the one who issues a claim of certainty, I know them to be mine, wins. We call that bori. Bori is a claim of certainty. Eini yodea we call shema, maybe, or I don't know, doubt. Lema tevi tiufta de Rav Nachman. Let us say then that this Mishnah represents a refutation of the opinion of Rav Nachman. Apparently, and we'll see very shortly, Rav Nachman has a different attitude, a different ruling when it comes to Bori versus Shema. According to our Mishnah, a Bori, a claim of certainty, wins out over the claim of Shema, of I don't know. Well, let's see, where did Rav Nachman say his point? The Itmar, it was taught, Mona li biyadcha, one claims, you owe me Emona, $100. Falo Mereini Odean, the other one responds saying, I don't know. I don't know if I owe you. Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda, these two Amoroyim say, Amri, they both say, Chayav. The fellow who responded with, I don't know, has to pay, because the claim of certainty is a winning claim in the face of a response of doubt. Rav Nachman v'Rav Yochanan Amri, and we dashed underline Rav Nachman especially, they say, Potter, just because he responds, I don't know, doesn't obligate him to pay. There's a, we'll say, a counter force to the claim of certainty, and that is that the person who's responding, I don't know, is in possession of the money. The issue is, does he have to part with the money that he's currently in possession of? We call that, he has a chazoka, he has a holding on the money. And in a situation like that, where you have a claim of bori against the cheskas momon, so the bori doesn't win out. So that we see from here that according to Rav Nachman, a claim of bori would not be a winning claim over a response of Ein Yodea. And yet in our Mishnah, it would seem that it is. Can we explain our Mishnah in such a way that it's not a refutation to Rav Nachman? The Gemara answers yes, there is a way to explain the Mishnah. We have to add a little information, a little background to the Mishnah, and we'll see how it's different than a simple case of one claiming Bori and the other responding with a Shema, with a claim of doubt. Kide Omar Rav Nachman, as Rav Nachman explained elsewhere, Kegain Sheish Esek Shua Beinehem, that's this concept of Esek Shua, something we've learned in the past, and we'll go over it very shortly, but for this second, it's simply referred to it as a concept. And Rav Nachman used that concept to explain another case. Hachanami, so we'll adopt that explanation, Kegain Sheish Esek Shua Beinehem, that between the two parties in our Mishnah, the one claiming the stones to be his and the other fellow, there is a, we'll call it a potential need for an oath. And we're going to see very shortly in our Gemara where there is the need for an oath, but the oath for technical reasons cannot be taken. A person who wants to, let us say, make a statement exempting himself from payment, ordinarily he would have to swear to that effect, but if for a technical reason he can't swear, so we make him pay. And that is the situation in our Mishnah. We'll come back to this point in a moment. Just let us read a few more lines of Gemara. Hechi domi esek shvua, what is meant? What are you speaking of when you use the term esek shvua? Kidda Rava, in accordance with Rava's teaching, Diyama Rava, Mona Libiotcha. One claims you owe me $100. In other words, $100 of mine, Mona is like $100. $100 of mine is in your hands. In other words, you owe me $100. V'halo Omer. And the other party says, Ein Lecha Biyodi Elo Chamishim. I certainly owe you 50. V'ashar Ein Yodeh, but the balance I don't know. As you look at this case, it's very reminiscent of what we call moda b'mitzvah, partial confession. In general, where a person partially concedes to the claim, and the other part he denies, the Torah says you must swear to substantiate your claim. You must swear to substantiate the claim that you're making that you don't owe the other portion. In this case, he concedes to owing half. Regarding the other portion, he's not denying it. He's saying, I don't know. The Torah doesn't account for people who say, I don't know. There's no Torah Shavua for someone who partially concedes and regarding the balance says, I don't know. So what do we do with that? Mitel Sheni Yochol Yishava, since he can't swear, because you don't swear to substantiate a claim of, I don't know. So, since he can't swear, Yishalem, he has to pay. So too, in our Mishnah, you had one party claiming a certain number of whole bricks to be his. The other party is saying, well, some of them, yes, those are yours. The others, I don't know. So, since there was a partial confession, which a partial admission, which would have generated a shvua, because of he's being moida b'mitzas. However, we already explained that the shvua is to substantiate the denial. The other part, I don't owe you. But in this case, he's not denying it. He's simply saying, I don't know. So since he can't swear, he has to has to part with it, so to speak. He has to accept what the other party is claiming as those bricks are definitely mine, and he'll be able to take them. The Mishnah said that when you have a situation like that, where someone is recognizes some of the material, some of the whole bricks to be his, he takes them. And the Mishnah went on to say, "V'oiloi sloi minachesben." And we learned Rashi on the Mishnah, and Rashi on the Mishnah said that that means that the whatever the first party who recognizes the materials as his takes, the other party takes a corresponding amount of stuff. Sovar Rova Lememar Lafi Cheshbon Shuras. Rava thought that what it means is the other party will take broken bricks corresponding, we'll say percentage-wise, to the whole bricks that the first party took. Well, if you're going to accept that approach, Alma, you see from here, Kevan Diomar Eini Yodea, since he said, I don't know, Reyat Fei, he comes out in a worse position, meaning all he's going to get now are broken bricks corresponding to the whole bricks that the first party took. Omar le Abaye, Adarabo, Ha Reyat Fei. He says to the contrary, the other party is coming out in a weaker position. Midahani Yoda. From the fact that these he recognizes, in the Mishnah, it said he's makir mitzas avonav. From the fact that he recognizes only part of the bricks, the whole bricks to be his, tvei lo yoda, more he doesn't know, su less lay. So then any more he would not be entitled to. The idoch kulu dehechninu, and all the rest of the whole bricks would go to the other guy. Elo Omar Abaye. Lefi Cheshbon Shlemus. Abaye says that if the first party who recognized part of the bricks to be his, the part of the unbroken bricks to be his, the other party who said, I don't know, he will take a corresponding percentage of whole bricks for himself. Well, Ihachi, my Komahanile, if in this scenario both parties are taking whole bricks, what benefit was there to the person who recognized some of the whole bricks to be his? The fact that he recognized it doesn't seem to give him any advantage over the other guy that says, I don't know. Well, the Gemara answers there is an advantage. Because even within the realm of whole bricks, if he happened to recognize the better quality whole bricks, and we'll see very shortly in the Gemara that there are two considerations that might be reason for calling some of the bricks better quality than others, he'll be able to take advantage of that. And here the Gemara answers, L'malbina revocha, inami tino dimabda. Let's look at Rashi together. Lamalbino Ravocha. Rashi in the lower part of the narrow lines, he says, Yesh Levenim Asuyas Kimalbain Shu Rochov Mechavero. There are bricks that are rectangular in shape, though they happen to be wider than others. So those would be worth more. So by saying, I recognize these bricks to be mine, if it just so happens to be that the bricks he is specifying as his happen to be the wider variety, he'll be taking those. True, the other guy will get a corresponding number of bricks, but he'll be getting the narrower ones. Rashi continues, Inami Latino Demabdo, Yesh Tit She'oisin Mimeno Levenim. The raw material for brick making is called tit. So that, we'll use the word mud for the time being. There is mud that from which bricks are made. Shem'ubud Mugubul Yafa Mechavero. In the preparation of the mud, it involves mixing the dirt with the water and kneading it well, so that the quality of the raw material for the brick making of some happen to be better than others. So if you happen to recognize complete bricks, whole unbroken bricks, made with the Tina Demabda, the well-needed mud, you'll be able to take those based on your definitive recognition of them. The other party will get whole bricks, but the other bricks that he'll be taking will not necessarily be of the same quality raw material. We continue with a Mishnah. Interestingly, it opens up with the same opening as the previous Mishnah, but you'll see very different circumstances. Habayis Valiyah. You have a lower structure and a second story, an upper level. And the upper level, there is a tenant that's renting the property. He's renting the upper level. Nifchasa Aliyah, the upper story, Nifchasa. Nifchasa has to do with, we'll say, it's a hole developed in the floor of the upper one. The Ein Balabayas Roitze Lesakein, and the owner, the landlord, doesn't want to fix the hole in the floor of the upper story. Hare Balo Aliyah Yore Vidor Lamata. The tenant has a right to descend and dwell in the lower structure, in the lower part. Ad Shiyasakein Lo Es Aliyah, until the landlord fixes the upper story. Rabbi Yossi Omer Hatachto Noisein Es Hatikra V'Elyon Es Hamaziva. We'll translate right now. The Gemara itself will have to explain the underlying point of difference between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakhama, but in the meantime, the translation would be that according to Rabbi Yossi, the lower party, he provides the Tikra. Tikra would be the beams that form his ceiling, which is also the floor of the upper story. And the Elyon provides the maziva. Maziva, we'll refer to it as plaster that is put on the tikra, put over the beams. The Gemara. Nifchisa bekama. The Mishnah spoke about a hole developing in the floor of the second story. Well, how big a hole is this? Rav Omar Beruba, the majority of the floor space of the upper story fell in. Shmuel Omar Be'arba'o, Shmuel says four tfachim, four hand breaths. In other words, according to Shmuel, most of the floor space is intact. However, there is a hole that measures four tfachim, four hand breaths. And now the Gemara goes over the machlokis. Rav Omar Beruba, Avol Barbo Lo. Rav said that the din of the Mishnah, whereby the owner or the tenant can descend and dwell in the lower story, is only if the majority of his floor caved in. But four tfachim, no. Four tfachim doesn't give a right to the tenant in the upper story to descend and dwell completely in the lower story. Why? Adam dor chetzio lamato v'chetzio lamala. If we can translate, but we have to give much more background before we can understand the Gemara. The translation is: if the hole was four tefachim, a person can dwell partially downstairs and partially upstairs. According to Rav, if a hole of four tefachim develops, the procedure that follows is based on the idea that four tefachim is the space upon which someone would place a vessel. Four tefachim is we'll call it a minimum area of significance. It's significant in the sense that in a spot of four tefachim, you might place a small closet, a bowl, or whatever vessel that is of a, let's say, similar size. So, four tefachim represents an area on which that if the floor hadn't caved in, you would have been able to put something there. Now that the floor caved in, leaving a hole of 4 tefachim, so you're missing that spot for placing the vessel. So what's the procedure? So Rav tells us that what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to place that vessel in the lower floor when you need it. So you go down there and use it over there, but you're not allowed to dwell down there as just because a hole of 4 tefachim developed. Now this idea of going downstairs to use the vessel that you would have that occupies those 4 tefachim, those 4 tefachim upstairs. The hole develops. So you don't have those 4 tefachim available anymore. So you use the downstairs guys 4 tefachim for putting your vessel. And that's and that Rav describes as a person. It's reasonable to expect of people to dwell part downstairs. And we say the dwelling downstairs is a reference to the use of the vessel that he's going to now place downstairs, and the rest of his living experience upstairs. We continue in the Gemara. Ushmuel Omar Barbo. Shmuel says a hole of 4 tefachim is enough reason for enabling the upper fellow, the tenant, to move downstairs. Ein Odom Dor Chetzio Lamato VeChetzio Lamala. You cannot expect a person to dwell, to live in such a fashion. Part upstairs and part downstairs. We continue in the Gemara. But before we do so, we have a series marking a triangle will appear, and on the side, under our Mivne, our structural note, we've written the following. The triangle is featured. Birur ma hoyu tanoi asirus. We want to clarify, what were the conditions in the initial rental? You have a tenant. He reached some type of a contractual agreement with the landlord. What were the details? Hechi domi. We continue in the Gemara. E de Omar, if the agreement was stated as follows. Aliyah zu. This attic I am renting to you. Well, and now something happened. Asda means tough luck. It literally means it's gone. Rashi explains it's your bad fortune. It's your misfortune that caused this to happen. I don't have any further responsibility. Ella, di amale, aliyah, stam. Rather, what happened? What were the circumstances? A landlord said, I am renting you an aliyah, an upper story. And the Mishnah said, the Mishnah spoke about the collapsing of the floor, so the owner doesn't want to fix it, so upper guy imposes himself, forces himself, and moves downstairs. In other words, he can insist on living downstairs. That's what the Mishnah indicated. But now, if the original agreement was, I, the landlord, am renting to you an aliyah, loger le'achriti, let the landlord find another attic, a second story, and rent that to him. Why do we force the landlord who lives on the lower floor to absorb within his confines, within his walls, the tenant from the upper story? The agreement was very general. I, the landlord, I'm going to rent to you an aliyah. Omar Rava lo tzricha, no. It is necessary to teach our Mishnah under the following circumstances. The landlord said, Aliyah zu shani maskir loch. This attic that I am renting to you, kisalka solik bada. When you go up into it, while it's still standing, go up into it. The chinochis literally means, and when you come down. But it's a reference to a situation that if it caves in, if there's a breaking of the floor, if you have to go down, chos bahada, then go down into it, into the house. Well, then, if those are the circumstances, do you really need a Mishnah to spell out that which is obvious? If those are the circumstances, so why do you need a Mishnah to tell me it's so obvious? The landlord says, well, as long as you're at your second story this second story that I'm renting to you is intact, you live up there. If it caves in, you live down here. Elo Amar Avashi. The Omar Lei. Aliyazu, the landlord said to the tenant, Aliyazu she'al gabi bayis ze, ani maskir loch. This attic that is atop this house, I am renting to you. Now, by saying that, Rashi points out that there's the expression. The she'al gabi bayezeh, that's a seemingly extra expression. Why? Because once you say aliyah zu, this attic, so we know which attic he's referring to, a very specific attic. It's atop this house. So why does he add that's atop this house? So the result of that is the hashabid bayis laliyah. He is binding the house to the aliyah. What do we mean by that? Binding the house. That if something happens with regard to the aliyah, it breaks. So the house is bound to fulfill your dwelling needs. So just to repeat, by virtue of the fact that the landlord added an expression that didn't seem to be necessary. It was kind of like obvious. Why'd you say the obvious? So by saying what we call the obvious, he was binding his house, he was binding this house, the lower story, to provide the needs, the welfare of the tenant. And there's a precedent for this. V'chiha d'yoma Ravin ba Rav Ada Omar Rav Yitzchak, similar to what Ravin said in the name of Rav Yitzchak, Ma'ase be'echad shomer l'chaver, an incident where one said to his friend. Now, as we read the Gemara, I want to emphasize that we're going to be adding and changing a couple of words based on the amendations of the Rashash. And with the Rashash, it's minor, we'll call it detail or minor changes, then the case that we're going to read now will parallel word for word, though different circumstances, the reading of or the approach of Ravashi. So what's the story? We said there was a Maisa with a person that said to his friend, Dolis is a grapevine that's supported upon something else. Dolis zu, this grape, this vine, she'al gabi parsek zeh, that is resting upon or supported upon this parsek. Parsek is a type of fruit tree. The fruits are called afarsekin. In modern Hebrew, you see the term afarsek as referring to what in English we would call a peach. So if you want to use the modern Hebrew root, by all means, I certainly do not guarantee that the word you see in the Talmud is necessarily the same as modern Hebrew. There are many, many examples where there's a discrepancy between the Talmudic expression and the modern Hebrew expression. But for our purposes, we can certainly refer to the parsek as a fruit tree. So there the owner of a grapevine said that this vine that is resting upon this parsek tree, ani maskir loch, that change is again based on the Rashash. I am renting it to you. I'm renting to you the vine. You'll pay me some type of monthly or seasonal rate, and you benefit from all of the fruits. And what happened? Vineka parsek, the support tree was uprooted, and that of course becomes a injurious to the vine. and the case came to the attention of Rabbi Thiyah Yomar, and he ruled Chayav Atu Lahamid Lo Parsek Kol Zman Shadolis Kayoma. The owner must provide a replacement parsek as long as this vine is extant. So that you see that by having said an added expression that binds the owner into providing an alternative for this situation, so that the one who rented the vine has a right to insist on any provisions needed to preserve this particular vine. I'm going to repeat the, maybe it's obvious, but in the agreement the fellow said, I'm renting to you this vine that's resting upon this parsec. Did he have to say this parsec? Once you said this vine, I see that this vine is on the parsec. What do you have to add this parsec? So in this sense, it's similar to the case that Ravashi spoke of, where the landlord said this attic on this house. And we pointed out earlier that the bayezeh was seemingly an extraneous expression once having said this attic. I know then that it's on this house. Why did you say it? So he was binding himself to, the landlord was binding himself to provide for the welfare of the tenant, and not in some in any location, as the Gemara suggested before, but rather something local, right over here, right on this spot. And in that sense, you see the parallel between that case and the Ravin case with the vine. The Gemara continues. Boi Rabbi Abba Bar Momo. Notice we have a question, a long question marking, and this will take us down quite a few lines down the top of Kuf Yud Zayin Omen Aleph. So Rabbi Abba asks, Kishuhu Dor, when the tenant descends to the house, whether the four Tvachim caved in or the Rove caved in, either way, given the circumstances that the tenant is going to move downstairs, Levado Hudor Kidamei Kora Oidil Moshneam Dorim. And we'll go over this again. The first side is that he would go down, dwell there by himself, and the owner of the house will have to leave against his will. He can't remain there, as the tenant was dwelling in the attic in the second story by himself. So that in the case that the tenant is moving downstairs, do we replicate the dwelling circumstances, just like above he was by himself, so to now he has a right to insist on being alone. Oidilmo, or possibly Shnehem Dorin, no, both dwell below. The Amale, the owner, the landlord can say, you know, I rented to you up your story and there was an agreement, you're going to come down if something happens, but Adaita de Leafkinon lo agri loch, but with the intention that you would remove me, vacate me from my premises, that I never had agreed to. I didn't rent to you the second story with that intent. In Timsu Lomar, you'll notice we have a dashed underlining here, and you'll see a few lines later where the Gemara is building up on what was said. So we have several stages of this in the Gemara. Im timtze lomar shneim dorimbo, if you take that side, that both will be living on the lower story. The question now is the access of the tenant who was living beforehand above. How does he gain access to the house, to the lower floor? Kishu mishtamish, when he comes to use the bias, the lower floor. Derech psochem mishtamish, does he go through the regular doorway? Oy derech gagin mishtamish. And now the Gemara analyzes the question. Derech gagin literally means via the roof. And we'll now analyze. Mi omar kidamei kora, do we reinstate this claim of, well, like it was before? Mamei kora derech gagin, just like before when the attic was intact. So you went up toward the roof to get into the attic. Hashtanami derech gagin, so too now. You climb up. Rashi describes climb up a ladder that was outside that had an entrance to the attic, and that ladder certainly enabled a person to also to reach the roof. So you now too go up and down. In other words, you go up to what was the attic, and there's a hole in the floor, and now climb down. Oy, Dilma, motzi amalei, or maybe the tenant can say, Aliyah kabili alai, when I accepted to rent from you, I accepted upon myself to go up. Aliyah v'yirida lo kabili alai, I didn't accept upon myself to go up and then come down. And if that is a solid claim, then none of this. I'm not going to do up, down. I'm going to go right through the regular entrance to the house. If you will side with the tenant's claim that he did not accept upon himself to go up and down, what about the following scenario? We're going to describe now a three-story structure. Shtei aliyozu al gabi zumahu. Two attics, one above the other. So you have a ground floor, a second floor, and a third floor. The Gemara gives two scenarios. The ifchis, number one, ifchis el yoyna, if you had a tenant in the third story and the floor of that fell in, nachis v'dor b'tachtona. This is poshut, this is obvious. He has a right to move into the lower attic. So that's not a question. Number two, if his tachtona ma'ale mislak legamri belyona, if the tenant was occupying the second floor, called the middle level, what do we rule now? Does he go up? Ma'u lemislak, mislak to go up, legamri belyona, does he go up completely into the third floor? Or can he force the owner to have him, the former tenant, the tenant of the middle floor, move in with him down on the lower floor? Mi amrinan, the amale, do we say that the owner, the landlord, can claim shame aliyah kabilas alach? You accepted upon yourself the rental of that which is called an attic. Okay, so you were in the middle floor. That was an attic. There's another attic above you. Move into that, because that's what the agreement was, that you are renting an attic. Dilma, or maybe the tenant can have he has a comeback, a counterclaim. Chadaliyah kabul alay. He can say one floor, one rising. It was one floor I accepted to climb up one floor, one flight of stairs. Shtei aliyos lo kabul alay, but two flights, that he didn't accept upon himself. And if that claim were to be accepted, so then he can respond to the landlord, say, I'm not moving to that third story. I'm moving in to where you are. Peku. This remains unresolved. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.